Blog Talk Radio.
Well, something's not playing, so I guess we're going to have to open up with something else. I uploaded a tune. I guess it will give you Begin to Begin in rock and roll a cappella. I believe the group is known as the Flamingos. Yes. Welcome to the Spirit of America party. Very good sounding group, man. Real tight harmony. Welcome to the Spirit of America party and the Spirit of America party book. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. If you want to know who's hurting your country, get Spirit of America party book. I think by chapter 3 you'll have a list of all the flag burners of record. 40 Democrats have voted to burn the flag 40 days before 9-1-1. Can you believe that? Huh? You ever hear the Billy Joel song, Allentown? And they're shutting all the factories down. Our fathers fought the Second World War, spent their summers at the Jersey Shore. If those fathers that fought the Second World War could get their hands on those Viet Congress mice, those communist rats that voted to burn the flag, they would kill every one of them. They would kill them all. Or they would beat them so bad, they would tar and feather them. They would run them out of town on a rail. The American way. If he had to open up his show, yeah, you get a boot in your ass, it's the American way. if it only were true. But now we're all little lemmings in the lemming pool. What can we do? We're helpless. The communists have taken, we lost our country. The communists have taken it over. People are afraid to say the word communist. Well, I'm against those liberals. Liberals? What's so liberal about a liberal? Those guys are communists. They're atheists. They're flag burners. They have no God. They hate this country. Just ask the President of the United States. Get him drunk some night, and he'll tell you all about how much he hates this country. And it has nothing to do with the race card. It has everything to do with communists are superior to dogs. And you, my American ally, are a dog. And if you don't believe me, did you get your mail from your insurance company today? Was it addressed to Dear Dog, your insurance is canceled? Oh, yes, we're going to have more LBJ guns and butter. Did you see that episode that was only shown on Fox, and it was only a telephone video that took place on a plane flying from Atlanta to LAX, I think, before that guy got in there and started shooting it up the other day. But on the plane was the body of a soldier that Obama is quietly slipping into an American grave. And he doesn't want that soldier to get any attention because somebody's going to say, well, how many have you killed in this war, like George Bush killed 4,700 in Iraq? And Obama will have to say, well, I only killed 2,500, but I'll beat George Bush's record on the run out when we betray everybody else that we leave behind. Yeah. We're in trouble, man. We're losing our country, less than 1%. How sad that the people on that plane, they were totally in awe of the fact the pilot came on 45 minutes before landing and said, please do not disembark the plane before the military guys have a chance to offload the coffin. And when the plane landed, the only tribute that was there were a couple of fire trucks that they do a salute with the fire hoses and the spouts of water, and that was it. That's all. And then the mother came and put her hand on the coffin as they led it away. How's that, huh? And you have these bastards in Congress that are making money hand over fist in pharmaceutical trades and writing legislation to line their pockets and voting for legislation to line their pockets. And they have the balls to stand up and say, we can't afford to lose blood and treasure. They shed no blood, and they steal the treasure. The national treasure that belongs to that mother is her son in a coffin, who, with good intentions, joined the military to protect his country. That was you. That was me, and everybody else, less than 1% defends the country, and Obama is destroying the military. Stalin destroyed his officer corps. Stalin destroyed the Polish officer corps, and Obama bin Laden is destroying the American officer corps. They just had a gay wedding at West Point. I'm sure everybody is thrilled about that. And they can't wait for the day when they can perform a gay wedding in a Catholic church as they close it for non-payment of taxes. Because those 18,000 IRS agents aren't coming for health care. they're coming to destroy the churches in this country. And you wait and see. And the stronger this guy gets, the tighter the noose around your neck is going to be. So, having said that, I'm going to now tell you that today is the first day of the attack on baby Jesus. Every year at this time, the communists in this country rally and begin their communist essay to eliminate the name of baby Jesus. Yet it says in the Bible, at the sound of his name, every knee shall bend. And one day your knee shall bend. Yes, and it may not be for baby Jesus, but it may be to have your head cut off. Because no God, no country. So I am going to lead my Christmas assault, or as I like to call it, Christ Mass assault, with the first hymn of the season. And I just wanted to mention, give a shout out to Macy's, who got rid of baby Jesus, got rid of the miracle on 34th Street, and they have replaced a Merry Christmas with Believe. And you got to believe in the big red star of Macy's, comrade. This is the first Russian gummy store they have converted to a gummy store. Macy's, the red star. Believe. Believe, comrade. Believe you're going to the gas chamber. Yeah. We'll be going in a different numerical order this time.
Unis, ce qu'enchaînait le fait. Notre reconnaissance, c'est pour nous tous, qu'il naît, qu'il souffre et meurt. Peuple debout, chante ta délivrance, Noël, Noël, chantons le rédempteur.
Thinking about that GI in a coffin quietly being slipped back into the United States by Obama and his political correctness on the battlefield. And I said, oh, how I wish I had been on that plane. I would have started a prayer. Everybody on that plane should have done a prayer. They should have said a common prayer, like the Our Father, very common. And prayed for that GI and his family. It's really sad. Equally sad are the number of suicides that are taking place in this country. From just the recent events, the girl that was bullied by her classmates and she jumped off a tower in a concrete plant. The guy that went into the mall looking for TSA people, or the airport, LAX, he went into looking for TSA people, walked in with a rifle, nobody stopped him. The guy up in Paramus, New Jersey, who fired a couple of shots in the air and then took his life. Every day, somebody from Hollywood checks out. And what's really sad is they get no spiritual help. You can send them to a psychiatrist. You can send them to doctors. You can give them medication. But you got to give them spiritual help. And you got to give them spiritual help starts when you're very young. It's like getting a vaccine and then you update your shots. And one day, when you call upon God for help, you just might get it. There is such a thing as miracles. Not too many, but sometimes the power of prayer can help you along. And it's sure an extra way of getting better chances for survival. And all of these people that check out, the last place they go is to a church or a synagogue. I'm not going to say a mosque, because they may give them a belt to wear. Sorry, pals. I call them as I see them, and you guys aren't doing too good. Anyway, so having said that, I think that we got a big problem in this country. We are really, we are too decadent for our own good. Did you see the mayor of Toronto, Canada? He says he's not an addict. He's only doing crack. And he only did it once. You show me an addict that only did crack once. Yeah. You show me anybody that did crack once. Well, you know, the weed is not like crack. You want to know something? Everybody who ever wrote deed started with weed. Yes. There's a nice little jump that they all make from weed to heroin. If they're in the upper crust, or they do the cocaine until they run out of money, then they do the crack. Yeah, we're in trouble, man. And yeah, if you notice that the only entrepreneurs that are really making a bundle in this country anymore are the porn producers, the marijuana producers, and wait till you see when that nightmare lights up. You have no idea what's coming your way. No idea. In Chicago, they have a Mexican drug gang that has been imported from Mexico. You know, they come over the border, it's open. 100,000 of them are in Chicago, and they're fighting over turf. Turf! And then they smoke the turf. Now, once drugs are legalized, you know that the organized crime is going to get into the business, even on a grander scale. It's going to be hard. You know, you can down in North Carolina, you can buy a carton of cigarettes tax-free, and you bring them up and save a bundle. Don't you think that's going to happen? I got a buddy that's got a farm. Yeah, you want to go to the farm? We buy direct. Oh, but that's against the law. Who cares? Who cares? That's what we got lawyers for. And the ACLU. And speaking of the ACLU, this is their time of the year to destroy a baby Jesus. So they'll be out there in all their glory, threatening small towns that can't pay their bills with big lawsuits. And when they win them, the government pays them. How's that? Huh? How about paying insurance money so that you can pay for child murder and drug rehab? Right? Here I am. I'm healthy. I'm in shape. I'm not doing anything wrong. I got no STDs. I'm clean as a whistle. And how much is my premium? What do you mean it's three times what it used to be? How come? Pay for abortions now? Oh, but I don't believe in abortion. It's against my religion. What do you mean, too bad? It's part of the program? What program is that? It's Obamacare. Obamacare, huh? That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay, so you know what? When everybody was passing the joint around, I passed on it. I said, nah, I don't want it. When they were passing the cocaine around, I passed on it. It was tempting. Well, the girls were beautiful and everybody was high. It was real tempting. But I knew once I started that, I'm a weak person. I would never beat it. So I never did it. So how come my insurance premium's so high? I got to pay for rehab. Oh, and medical marijuana. Oh. Everybody's got glaucoma, huh? Wow. Give me a break, guys. We're sowing the seeds of our own destruction. On the ballot tonight in New York City, there were six amendments to vote for. One amendment was to add seven gambling casinos to New York State. Here you go. The government now makes money on porn, drugs, and gambling. You know what? Weren't they all mafia jobs at one time? What do you think about that? I voted no. I voted no. You know why? Because I look at Atlantic City and I see a lot of poor people living on the outskirts. And I don't see Atlantic City creating as many jobs as they pretend they create. And I don't see them paying as good a wage as they could pay. And seven more revenue traps for the New York State government run by a crazy man who tells you you don't need 10 rounds of ammunition to kill a deer. It has nothing to do with killing deer, buddy. It has everything to do with killing guys like you who are taking over the country and destroying it. It is to defend ourselves against tyrants like you. If you try and take our freedom away. That's how the American Revolution got started. The shot heard around the world. One shot. How sad. And they want to take everybody's guns away. The only reason they want to take your guns away is they intend to kill you. Bill Ayer says 30 million Americans will refuse to convert to communism, no matter how hard that we try and put them in the camps. They are not going to do it. They have to be annihilated. He's now teaching in a college somewhere and an advisor to the president. President Obama bin Laden. You lost your country. You don't realize it yet. But you know what? The first wake-up call was your increase in your premiums. You have no idea what's happening. Young people, you're screwed. You're absolutely screwed. People that are working 2 and 3 jobs, one of those jobs has to pay your taxes. And you've got congressmen and senators, man, that party all day long. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go upstairs and get a book that I've been reading. And I'm going to give you some clues on how the House and the Senate are ripping you off. Both parties. Oh, and the other thing that I voted to no one was extended terms for judges. The judgeships of 5 years in the United States, they wanted to extend it to 12. I said, no way. No way. There should only be one term per termite. And get them out, get them in, get them out, and no dynasties. Let's bring people in besides lawyers and millionaires. Let's bring in people that can do something for the people, that still remember what it's like to be a person. Give you another tune. This one, let's see, we find something nice. And this is an old 50s song. Then one of the lines in it is, we go together like straws and a Coke, two straws and a Coke, a guy and a girl. Today when they sing that song, they both got the other end of the straw up their nose. Here you go. I'm going to give you another tune. You heard the words of that tune. Why don't you come over and meet my folks? And then you got guys singing songs like, "She's not the kind of girl you can bring home to mama." Unbelievable. Okay, let's see. Let's see what we got. We'll give you Till Then. It's 2 minutes. All the rock and roll songs for 2 minutes. GIs, man, it's really sad. They're over there in Afghanistan. I'll never forget. Iraq was the wrong war. That's all you ever heard. This from the people that hid under their beds on 9-1-1. Iraq was the wrong war, and Bush Sr., he was in Kuwait. He didn't go far enough. He should have went into Iraq. These are the same people that said that when Bush Sr. Got out of Kuwait after he made it the shortest war in history. He threw Saddam out. They could have finished him off on the highway of death, and Colin Powell says it's a turkey shoot, don't do it. And he allowed the Republican Guard to escape, thanks to Colin Powell. And the Republican Guard was waiting when the troops made the run into Baghdad. And they mingled among the people, and they made it bloodier than it could have been. We could have eliminated them and when we freed Kuwait. But Colin Powell said it's a turkey shoot. Yeah, a turkey shoot. And the liberals and the communists, oh, the innocent children that get killed. You don't think Saddam killed any? You don't think that the Iraqis killed any? Well, there was no weapons of mass destruction. Is that why Obama didn't want to go to Syria? Because he'd find out that Saddam had them all hidden in Syria? Is that the real reason that Obama didn't want to go? Or was he under orders from Putin? Yeah, the red line man. I'm going to draw a red line. He's got a crayon. This is the president draws the red line with his crayon in his coloring book. Yeah. Well, under Bush, when an American died, the next day the mother, coming out the door, had 7 microphones in her face. So how do you feel now that your son is dead under George Bush? 2,500 Americans have been murdered in Afghanistan, and their bodies are slipped home very quietly, not to call any attention to the casualty list. God knows how many are wounded. It could be 40,000. And they're going to have to live with those aches, pains, and missing limbs their entire life, 50, 60 years. And that doesn't count the mental anguish. And some of these guys have rotated over to Afghanistan at least 4 times. And it seems like the ones that rotate the most are the ones that Obama's trying to get rid of. He's trying to discourage real men from joining the military. He wants to sissify it so it has no fighting capability. He's trying to discourage real men from joining. And the way he does it is he cuts their salary and he shortchanges their wives on payday. It is really sad. These military guys should be making double what they're making. Congress, it should be $5 million. Any GI that buys the farm, KIA, in action, $5 million. His mom says, look, you lost your son. We can't give you back your national treasure. But here, this will tide you over, but the rest of the family will cheer you up a little bit. One day when you're through grieving, at least you'll have, you want to go shopping, you'll have a little leg money. And $1 million per loss of limb, a guy has 2 legs, has $2 million. 2 legs and an arm is $3 million. 2 legs, an arm, and an eye is $4 million. And that's how you want to end wars? That's the way you do it. And this way some lying a congressman stands up and talks about we got to have guns and butter. Say, well, guns are going to cost you a lot more than the butter. Yeah, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. Less than 1% of the nation defends us. Think about that. And so for all those GIs and the husbands and wives of GIs that every night that they got to worry, just like a wife of a cop kissing him goodbye in the morning or on his shift, she doesn't know she's going to see him that night. This is for them.
Yeah, we're rolling.
Okay.
Quiet, boy. Hey, Charlie.
Just you know why you and I will by and by know true love ways. Sometimes we'll sigh. And we'll know why. Just you and I know true love ways. Throughout the day our true love ways will bring us joys to share with those who really care. Sometimes we'll sigh. times we'll cry, and we'll know why, just you and I know true love why.
Okay, we're back. I just thought entered my mind. O'Reilly was saying that Jesus never said to the good thief that soon you will be in paradise with me. This day you will be in paradise with me. And they said he couldn't have said it. O'Reilly says he couldn't have said it because crucifixion is really suffocation. The weight of your body prevents you from breathing and talking. I guess he's overlooking one little thing. Jesus could do anything he wanted to do, even in death. Yeah. And the other one that cracked me up was, he also said, this is the Bible according to O'Reilly, that the Holy Family never made the Hegira to Egypt. You know, the word Hegira was used first to describe when King Herod opened up the first Democrat abortion clinic in Israel, and when he learned that there was a Messiah in town, he ordered the death of everybody 2 years old and younger. And the Holy Family, Joseph was told in a dream, get out of town. And he left and went to Egypt. O'Reilly says he couldn't have went to Egypt because there were no buses. Yeah, and it would have been too long a trip. So I called the cops. I called the cops on O'Reilly, COPTS, and I referred to their history of Jesus in Egypt, and I like their version better. And they say there was a caravan route along the Mediterranean that brought the Holy Family to Egypt. And then they named some towns and they built some churches along the route that Jesus and the Holy Family took. So I'll take that information over O'Reilly's bus story. And then O'Reilly said that they had found, I'm making this up, but we'll have a laugh. O'Reilly said they found the bones of the of Mohammed right outside a disco in Nazareth. They dug down and they came up with a yellow cab, and the hack license said the Mohammed. Yeah, oh man, I tell you, the heretics come in with Harvard degrees now. Unbelievable, unbelievable. Are you impressed with the college degree? As you used to, as once you were. I'm not at all. I don't care if a guy's got a PhD or a BSA or a BMW. No, I'm not impressed. You want to know the truth? I think people are more savvy when they graduate high school than when they go to college. They come out, they're so much full of themselves that the first thing they give up is God. They're smarter than God. They created God. That's the first thing they give up. The second thing they give up is their morals. But we won't talk about pigs in a blanket. Yeah, imagine spending $50,000 a year. You send your daughter to an Ivy League school, and she's going to be a business major, and you see her down in New Orleans. You turn on the TV, and she's down in New Orleans on a balcony with the bazooms hanging out, working for beads. And she's a business major. Yeah, oh, man. Sick, sick. I'm going to give you a trickle, trickle. Another 50s tune. Trick, trickle, splash, splash. Tell me how long will this rain last? The rain keeps dropping, there ain't no stopping. Tell me how long will this rain last? Trick, trickle, slop, slop. Just got to see my feet don't drop.
Button roll.
we doing, America? We're not doing too good. And all those students that thought they were going to get their tuition paid by Obama, yeah, they're all going to be arrested if they don't get on the insurance payrolls. And what are we doing with the fifth layer of money takers in healthcare? I mean, before you had the patient, the doctor, the hospital, and the insurance company. And now the government's coming in for a piece of the action. And all you insurance companies out there, you're going along with this guy. You think you're going to get some gravy. You're going to get screwed. There's going to be one insurance company that gets to the man, and all the rest are going to get nothing. You guys are in trouble. They have to eliminate a middleman, and it isn't going to be the doctor, and it's not going to be the hospital, and it's not going to be the patient, and it's not going to be the government. So guess who's going? When I come back, I'm going to read you about some of the shenanigans that went on while they were screwing the American people on this healthcare issue. And I got to remind you, not one Republican voted for this health care plan. Not one. And Nancy Pelosi said, pass the law and then we'll find out what's in it. And Megyn Kelly was reading page 39,454 today. Do you think any of these guys read any of this? We're in trouble. What are we going to do? I'm going upstairs. I'll be right back down. I'm going to get the book that I'm reading called Throw Them All Out. And I'm going to enlighten you for the first time in your naive life. In the meantime, we'll play a fast, unchained melody. You know, this mayor in New York that's running for the mayorship, de Blasio, he's a communist. Did you know that? Yeah. Well, we're all going to learn about it after he's elected. It's another one of those. Elect him, and then we'll tell you what he's all about. I'm going to give you another tune, and I'm going to call somebody that can verify what I just said. And when I come back, if I catch him, we'll have some dirt on this guy. Let me see what we got here. They say it's wonderful. Oh no, that's no good. I can't play that one. All right, this one, they say it's wonderful. I thought I had the verdict by the five keys.
Rumors fly and you can't tell where they start, especially when it concerns a person's heart. I've heard tales that could set my heart aglow. Wish I knew if the things I hear are so.
They say that falling in love is wonderful. It's wonderful.
I miss my friend, but we'll try him again at 9 o'clock to see if we can catch him. And the name of the book that I'm going to talk to you about is Throw Them All Out, How Politicians and Their Friends Get Rich Off of Insider Stock Tips, Land Deals, and Cronyism That Would Send the Rest of Us to Prison. The author is a gentleman named Peter Schweitzer, S-C-H-W-E-I-Z-E-R. And the Washington Times says about Peter Schweitzer, he has performed a valuable service to his country. So basically, it tells you that all the politicians are crooked. And anybody that would allow a law that says that the House and the Senate are allowed to do insider trading, but Wall Street will go to jail if they're caught doing it. What does that tell you? That tells you that now they're writing laws to suit themselves. Okay? All right, so, and then what they did when they started to get some heat about stealing from the people, they said, okay, we're going to rescind that law that we can do insider trading. And that's it. Case closed. And a month later, they reinstated the law when nobody was looking. Okay? Must be a lot of money making as a congressman or a senator. One term per termite solves that problem, at least 80% of the problem. One term per termite. And that's it. When I saw that judges going from 5 years to 12 years, I said, no way. No ways that somebody could sit on a bench and torture people. Oh, but he would have been the greatest. Good. He would be the greatest for 5 years. And like they say, the cemeteries are full of indispensable people. So, this is chapter one. It's called The Drug Trade. Not the drug trade that the government is in selling narcotics, but the drug, this overlaps because that's coming too. This is the drug trade, pharmaceuticals. Over the past half century, there has been a massive web woven between the federal government and the healthcare industry, whether due to special taxes or fines. Let me tell you about fines, folks. They went after somebody today, an airline company, because they didn't have enough ramps at an airport for the handicap, and the government fined them a million something. My folks, my friends, that million something is going on your next airline ticket. Airline companies can't afford to pay these massive fines. You got to pay them. They're just another collection agency for the government. I just canceled an AT&T bill. You know how much it was? It was a line charge. The line charge was $7.95. Do you know how much the taxes were? $8.97. Oh, it's not all taxes. They call this a tax, but it's really a service fee or a fuel fee. Come on. It was higher than the cost of the service, the taxes were. And that's minute. That's nothing. Can you imagine how these other companies are being ripped off? And fines is another way of raising revenue for the communist government. And all you companies that are paying those fines, you're crazy. You should fight every one of them. Tie up the courts. Pay the fine and then sue to get your money back. And they come and fine you again. I know. You can't win. Well, it's your call, but you got to get smarter than them. Otherwise, you're going to be dumbed out of the business. So whether due to special taxes, fines, regulations, subsidies, or mandates, there has been enormous sums of money at stake in governmental decision-making for healthcare companies. One term per termite. And the company's investors, you want to know something else? $1 champagne contribution. $1. Nobody should own a congressman or a senator because he has the money to buy his vote. The most that, what's the guy's name that makes all the money? Warren Buffett. The most he should be allowed to donate is $1, just like you and me. By 2007, listen to the dates and listen to the amounts and listen to who's doing what. By 2007, I'm reading this guy's book because most of us will never buy it. But what he has is the truth, and it has to be told. So I'm not trying to rip off his book or anything. I'm just, if you're really interested, go out and buy it. But if you're not going to buy it, at least listen to what he says. By 2007, federal government programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and all others accounted for 46% of all health care spending in the United States. Knowing what changes might be in store for those programs and having advance notice of details of other healthcare legislation could translate into a lot of profits for a sitting United States senator trading stocks at the same time you are pushing and writing legislation could net you millions of in capital gains. Millions. You think they're in there for the $179,000 a year? Throughout one term per termite. Throughout 2009, Washington was consumed by the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, or what became commonly known as Obamacare. It began as a campaign promise, became a debate, and ended with horse trading, political threats, and partisan muscle. The bill was eventually passed by Congress and signed by President Obama. It was 2,500 pages long. Very few members actually knew everything that was in the bill or what it all meant. Some members had not even a chance to read it. The healthcare industry and these are the people that you paid to represent you and protect you. The healthcare industry and pharmaceutical companies employ thousands of lobbyists. Lobbyists, the only lobby that should be in Washington is in a hotel. I would disband lobbyists. You wouldn't be allowed to get near one of these pimpy for-sale politicians. When the dust finally settled, clear winners and losers emerged. The details that determined who came out ahead and who didn't were almost always hammered out behind closed the doors. Get the cameras in the conference rooms. Let's see what they're really like. A single event could cause the price of a stock to swing wildly. For example, when six senators announced on July the 27th, 2009, that they were going to eliminate the public option, a government-run insurance policy, from their version of the health care reform bill, the share prices of three major insurance companies surged by between 8 and 10% the very next day. Now, of those six, you don't think that they already bought them before they made the announcement? Trading stocks in such an environment could be highly profitable. How would you like to make 10% in a day? Especially if you knew about such events in advance. Here you go. Here comes the first rat. One of those at the center of shaping the bill was Senator John Kerry of Hanoi and Massachusetts. Kerry first elected to the Senate in 1984, has been a longtime advocate of health care reform. He serves as a member of the Health Subcommittee on the powerful Senate Finance Committee. The former Democratic nominee for president reporting for duty. Remember that? He came on the stage after screwing the United States military and calling them all murderers. He then plays his "I have a military uniform" card. The former Democratic and 247 swift vote vets were right. Or 347, and some of them were Congressional Medal of Honor winners. The former Democratic nominee for president is the member of the wealthy Forbes family and is the beneficiary of at least four inherited trusts. In 1995, his wealth jumped dramatically when he married Teresa Hines, the widow of Pennsylvania Senator John Hines, who died of mysterious circumstance. No, I'm only kidding. Heir to the Hines family fortune, Teresa Hines Kerry is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a lot of ketchup out there. Everywhere you go, John Kerry's on the table. Like other very wealthy people, John Kerry is an investor. His family trusts are relatively small, worth less than $1 million, according to his 2009 financial disclosures. By themselves, they could hardly sustain his lifestyle. The bulk of, and this guy's got all kinds of money. He's always talking about jobs for Americans. He goes to New Zealand and he has a yacht built for himself because he doesn't want to pay American labor costs. He then has it shipped to Rhode Island, the home of a sick governor, mentally sick governor, Lincoln Chapstick, who declares war on Christmas every year. Bans Christmas trees from the town hall, and Kerry kept his boat there so he wouldn't have to pay Massachusetts taxes. And he's looking out for the little guy, isn't he? The bulk of the Kerry's wealth resides in a series of marital trust and commingled fund accounts. Altogether, these funds include significant investments in stocks of many corporations. It is his buying and selling of health care stocks during the debate over health care reform. By the way, he also signed guns to be taken away from the Americans by the UN. He signed the UN treaty for gun control. John Kerry did. That is particularly interesting. While some have reported that Kerry's assets are in a blind trust, they have not been designated as such on his financial disclosure forms. Contrary to public perception, the major pharmaceutical companies were in favor of Obama's health care bill. Yeah, I think I heard that he made a deal with them before he even went into action. And he told them he would lay off them. Of course, you know, that goes without any champagne contributions because, you know, he's on the up and up. Hang in there one second. Big Pharma believed that the president's new program was expected to increase the demand for prescription drugs by making health care more accessible. Big Pharma, as the companies are collectively known, decided it could not stop the bill, so it might try to influence its provisions. Back in 1994, when the Clinton administration, notably Hillary, the bitch of Benghazi, with the phony blood clot story, had pushed for dramatic changes in the healthcare system, several effective ads sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry starring Harry and Louise helped defeat HillaryCare. In 2009, Big Pharma hired the two actors again, only this time they were 15 years older and they were in favor of the bill. "Well, it looks like we might finally get healthcare reform," said Harry in one ad. In July 2009, industry representatives met with key members of Congress and hashed out critical details of the new Obama bill. As the bill snaked its way through the House and the Senate, where Kerry was actively pushing it, here comes the money. The Kerrys began buying stock in the drug maker Teva Pharmaceuticals as the prospects of its passage improved. In November alone, they bought close to $750,000 in the company. When the Kerrys first began buying shares, the stock was trading around $50. After health care reform, it surged to $62. In 2010, the reform bill was signed. The Kerrys sold some of their shares in Teva, reaping tens of thousands in capital gains. It's unclear exactly how much because of the way the transactions are reported. You know what bugged me on 911? I wanted to know who sold the airline stock short when the buildings were coming down. And even more, I wanted to know who sold the airline stock short before the buildings came down. I don't think anybody ever checked that. And I went out to everybody. I went out to everybody to take a look. I never heard back. I think most of these guys don't read their emails. Politicians are required to report ranges only, not exact dollar amounts. As they held on to more than $1 million worth of Teva shares. All in all, healthcare stocks proved to be some of Kerry's best investments that year in terms of return on investment. To be sure, Kerry wasn't the only congressional trader in pharmaceuticals. John Tanner of Tennessee, a member of the House Ways and Means Committee, bought up to $90,000 worth back in April 2009 when the House was approving reserve fund budgeting for health care, part of the annual budget process. Also buying Teva was Senator Jim Webb of Virginia. This is Jim Webb of Virginia. What a phony he is. And Congressman Vern Buchanan of Florida. I don't know him. Unlike Kerry and Webb, however, Buchanan voted against the bill. Casting a vote is one thing. Betting on the final tally is something else. Most members, most of the time, know full well which bills will pass before they cast their votes. Let me read that one again. Most members, most of the time, know full well which bills will pass before they cast their votes. I always said that, you know, like the Democrats were voting on something unsavory, that and they knew they had 51% or 60%, whatever was needed. They would tell others that they didn't have to vote with them because they had it in the bag, and this way they wouldn't look as ratty as they are. Health care was such an important bill, and the Democrats had such a strong majority. Even if Scott Brown's surprise election in Massachusetts denied them a supermajority of 60 votes in the Senate, then opposing members like Vern Buchanan could still place bets on that the bill would eventually get to Obama's desk. The very idea that politicians trade stocks while they are considering major bill comes to a shock to many people. I read this to my wife. She told me to stop reading. She couldn't take it anymore. Senator Tom Carper of Delaware, there's a rat, voted to burn the flag. He's a Democamo, and the only one that stood up against him was Christine O'Donnell, and they smeared her. They did a Sarah Palin job on her, and the rhinos, a wooden backer. Karl Rove even publicly condemned her while she was running. So you got to get rid of the rhinos because they're just Democrats in reserve. And one of the biggest rhinos is the guy that voted to burn the flag with 40 Democrat senators. And that's the guy, Mitch McConnell. Tom Carper of Delaware sat next to Kerry on the Senate Finance Committee's Health Subcommittee. Carper, more of a centrist than Kerry, was concerned about the public opinion. And according to former Senator Tom Daschle, there's another guy with lined pockets, who was a point man in the Obama administration's push to pass the bill, Carper was intimately involved in hammering together the health care bill throughout the spring and summer of 2009. By the fall, he joined a group known as the Gang of Ten, who were trying to bring about a compromise with Republicans. Just a few weeks before, three committees had approved health care bills in rapid succession. Oh, when they want to pass something quickly, they do it in rapid succession. Carper began buying health care stocks that would benefit from the legislation he was supporting. He bought up to $50,000 in Nationwide Health Properties, a real estate investment trust that specialized in health care-related properties. He also picked up shares in Cardinal Health and Care Fusion. As we will see, Cardinal was a popular investment choice for those involved in the health care debate. So there's your Tom Carper and Christine O'Donnell. You should have nailed them on that. Even today, you should be out there shouting it. Congresswoman Melissa Bean of Illinois, a moderate, seemed torn over whether to vote for or against Obamacare. But her indecision didn't apply to her stock portfolio. Along with her husband, Bean traded shares as she watched the debate unfold in Washington. Indeed, although Bean and her husband are active traders, the only stock purchases they made during 2009 were in the healthcare sector. They bought shares in Cardinal Health, Care Fusion, and two drug manufacturers, Mylan and Teva. Bean bought Teva in the April at about $46 a share. After Obamacare passed, the shares soared to $63. She bought Mylan when it traded at $14 a share, and after Obama became law, it rocketed to $23 a share, up more than 50%. One of the most creative and cynical plays on health care reform comes from Congressman Jared Polis of Colorado. Polis is a young politician who had just taken his congressional seat in January 2009. But he was clearly seen as a rising star, red star, with an appointment to the powerful House Rules Committees. Too many committees. He also sits on the House Democrat Steering and Policy Committee and on the Education and Labor Committee's Subcommittee on Healthy Families and Communities. Polis is wealthy. He grew up amid privilege, and his family became enormously rich after founding and later selling BlueMountain.com, the greeting card website. Throughout 2009, Polis was a tireless advocate for Obamacare, declaring the health care reform could not come at a better time. Polis sat on two House committees that were central to the crafting and passage of the health care bill. As a member of House Education and Labor Committee, he was involved in shepherding through one of the three pieces of legislation that would become the final bill. And as a member of the powerful Rules Committee, he helped shape the parameters and procedures to secure passage of the bill in the House. None of this gave him pause when it came to investing in healthcare companies as he helped determine the fate of Obamacare. While Polis was praising the benefits of healthcare overhaul, he was building millions of dollars worth of a private company called Bridge Health International. Bridge Health describes itself as a leading healthcare strategic consultancy. It works with companies to help them cut healthcare costs. One of the things that Bridge Health offers is medical tourism. Medical tourism, providing less expensive medical procedures in countries such as China. You want liver? You want lung? Mexico, India, Thailand, Costa Rica, and Taiwan. In other words, Polis was betting that there would be more, not less, medical tourism after the passage of the health care reform. Why would that be? Because the cost is going up? Companies in the medical tourism industry generally agreed and favored Obamacare. They did not believe the bill would actually contain costs, and if anything, they expected overseas medical procedures to become more attractive. Imagine if our doctors go overseas. Medical Tourism Magazine. And then they'll be crying. They're making all their money overseas, and they won't bring it back for us to tax it. Yeah. Medical tourism expands as alternative to Obamacare. As the article put it, tourism has expanded rapidly as Americans react to the new federal law. After the reform bill became law, Bridge Health boasted that it was uniquely positioned to help companies cut their medical costs. What we can offer to the employer and insurer is health care reform today because we addressed quality and cost, Vic Lazzaro, their CEO, said July 2010, after the bill was passed. This was an opportunity to convert that Cadillac plan to a Buick because you can reduce the cost. All in all, Polis put $7 million to $35 million into the company as the health care bill wended its way through Capitol Hill. When investment timing was crucial, Polis's purchases often coincided with the work of the committees. As the Education and Labor Committee considered health care reform in June and July, my friends, the last thing we need in Washington is one more millionaire and one more lawyer. His committee passed the health care bill in mid-July. By October 2009, it was Polis's powerful Rules Committee that was determining which amendments would be considered and what the parameters of debate would be in the House as the House worked to pass the same legislation that was moving forward in the Senate. On October 13 and 23rd, Polis made two more purchases of shares worth between $1 million and $5 million. Polis' office, not surprisingly, insists that his investments had no influence on his vote. It was all a coincidence. Yeah, you believe in coincidences? Like two planes hitting two towers within a half hour of each other? But people do not make multi-billion-dollar investments in a vacuum, and Polis was well-positioned to know the details of the massive bill, as well as what amendments would or would not be considered. Okay, I'm going to give you a break. When we come back, we'll talk some more. Well, I talk, you listen. But that's all right. You don't mind. You're resting tonight. You're taking it easy. And you still love your country, even though it's stealing you blind.
Steal away. Let's steal away. No reason left to stay. For me and you, let's start anew. And darling, steal away.
Musical instruments in there. Isn't that great how a cappella works? I wish our generation would pick it up today. We could use a little wholesome music instead of some guy talking about farm equipment like hose. Unbelievable, man. Become a nation of sick people. Okay, so let me see what we got here. Then there's the matter of biotech investments. The health care reform bill that emerged from Pelosi's committees was also enormously beneficial for biotech companies. Embedded in the complex bill were two clauses that were vital for the profitability of these companies. The first was the Therapeutic Discovery Project Credit, which provided a 50% credit for investments in biotech pharmaceutical research. Far more important was the approval pathway for biosimilar biological products. The Food and Drug Administration gives traditional branded prescription drugs 5 years of exclusivity before a generic version of the same medication can be produced. But in this provision, biotech drugs were given a 12-year exclusivity. So there's 7 years that the American taxpayer took another pump. Yeah. Many observers like Dr. Jerry Avorn and Dr. Aaron Kesselheim of Harvard University believed that the 12-year period was unjustified and that 5 years was plenty of time. That was the position of the FDA itself. The longer window would, of course, be a boon to biotech investors. As biotech analyst Richard Gale put it after the law passed, biotechnology companies now have a known period of market exclusivity post-approval, one that is independent of patent time frames that will provide investors with the predictability they crave when they project product sales far into the future for biotech drugs and development. In the healthcare bill, he said the biotech industry got exactly what it wanted. Congressman Paulus Faber did Discovery Credit, and I didn't even heard. I don't even know this guy. I don't even recognize this guy. See how low key he is. And longer exclusivity provisions. And he made three large purchases of an exchange-traded fund when his committees pushed through the bill. He bought between $750,000 and $1.5 million in the PowerShares Dynamic Biotech and Genome ETF, just weeks after the committee proposed to extend the exclusivity period. He bought the fund at $16 a share, and after it passed, it jumped to $20 a share. How much money did he make? We'll never know because, curiously, having made these aggressive transactions throughout 2009, in January 2010, he suddenly converted his assets to a qualified blind trust. As we will see later, these blind trusts are not really blind. I never believed they were. And they don't prevent a politician from providing political intelligence to those who manage his accounts. In Poli's case, the person handling his trust was a longtime friend and large campaign contributor named Solomon Halpern. By creating the blind trust, Poli's no longer had to disclose his stock transactions or profits. You know what I see? I see a government that sees a lot of money to be made and does not care about the people. They can't even spread the wealth around. Meanwhile, John and Teresa Hines, Kerry, continued to trade along with Teva, and during 2009, they picked up shares in ResMed, at least $200,000 worth. ResMed makes medical devices such as airway aids for sufferers of sleep apnea. The Kerrys managed to snatch up shares in the $20 to $25 range. After healthcare reform passed, the shares in the company surged to $34, as much as 71% higher than what Kerry paid for them. 2 years later, this is the one, 2 years later in the spring of 2011, ResMed stock price had fallen back below 30. ResMed was a winner in the healthcare reform legislation, as Reuters declared, thanks in part to John Kerry's efforts. In early versions of the healthcare bill, device makers like ResMed were to be taxed starting in 2010 through an industry fee. In the final bills, fees for medical device makers were delayed until 2013, and the industry tax was replaced by a smaller sales tax, 2.3%. Kerry was a strong opponent of higher taxes on medical device makers. Oh, he's looking out for us, the little guy. The Kerrys also bought between $250,000 and $500,000 in Thermo Fisher Scientific, which provides products and services to hospitals and medical centers. The firm had a lot at stake with healthcare reform. The Kerrys bought the stake at around $35 a share. After the reform bill became law, the stock was selling at $50. 40% increase in profits. While the Kerrys were buying Obamacare winners, they were dumping losses. In the final bill, Pharma was a winner. The health insurance industry was a big loser. Not coincidentally, the Kerrys had been selling all their stock in health insurance companies. One such company, United Health, offers Medicare insurance. The legislation dictated lower reimbursements for Medicare procedures, lifetime coverage limits and protection against pre-existing medical conditions were removed. Extremely popular aspects of the bill, to be sure, but they squeezed United Health's bottom line. And by the end of June 2009, the Kerrys had sold all of their shares in United Health. They also dropped their investment in WellPoint, another health benefits company. Six weeks later, Kerry introduced an amendment to tax generous health care plans, which could clearly hurt companies like those whose stock he had just sold. How's that? You think he just betrayed GIs in Vietnam? Kerry's profitable history of congressional trading does not begin and end with the debate over President Obama's bill in 2009. Want to hear something funny? I started to do some research on Democrats and their campaign contributions. And I think if you just Google campaign contributions, one company comes up that does a nice job. And I Googled John Kerry. Do you know who John Kerry's largest contributor was last year? Are you ready? Bain Capital. Why, that's Mitt Romney's company. Bain Capital. John has about $20 million, I think, or maybe $15 million in his war chest. And his largest contributor was Bain Capital. Don't take my word for it. Google it. Indeed, some of the most dramatic and amazing well-timed trades occurred earlier during other health care-related high-stakes legislative battles. Some of his biggest scores were tied to his knowledge of obscure matters that had huge ramifications for certain companies. In May 2007, a government agency called the Federal Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services was looking at two drugs that were used to treat anemia in cancer patients. The agency had to decide, did Johnson & Johnson's Procrit and Amgen's Aranesp warrant reimbursement under Medicare? Johnson & Johnson was a large, diversified company with lots of products, so rejection of its drug would not be critical. But for Amgen, losing Medicare reimbursement for Aranesp would be a disaster. The drug was commonly given to elderly cancer patients, many of whom could afford it only under Medicare. Indeed, when the word went out that the government might end the reimbursements, Amgen shares plunged. But at least one investor avoided those losses with two nearly perfectly timed trades. On May the 4th, the Kerry sold between $250,000 and $500,000 in Amgen stock. 3 days later, they sold the balance of the stock in the company, another $500,000. When it closed at $63.76 per share. If they had waited 2 weeks, these sales would be worth between $50,000 and $100,000 less, because on May the 15th, it was publicly announced that Medicare would sharply limit reimbursements for treatment with Aranesp, and the price dropped to $54. And joining Senator Kennedy in dumping Amgen shares just in time were two senators who sat on the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, who did not have direct oversight of Medicare, but was involved in health and pharmaceutical policies in general. Senators Johnny Isaacson and Sheldon Whitehouse both sold between $15,000 and $50,000 worth of stock. On the same day, May the 9th, also avoiding large losses. Did Senator Kerry know the news was coming? Did Senators Isaacson and Whitehouse know anything? We cannot be sure. If they had worked in the private sector, their access and timing would most definitely been suspect. Short of sworn testimony, we cannot rule out they simply guessed right or were lucky. A few years before this narrow pharmaceutical debate, the Kerrys went on a big stock buying spree involving more than 100 healthcare transactions over the period of several months. The end result was capital gains of $500,000 and possibly as high as $2 million. It happened in 2003 when Congress was debating what would become the largest overhaul of the Medicare program in its 38-year history. The Medicare Prescription Drug Improvement and Modernization Act created a new entitlement benefit for prescription drugs. The drug manufacturers were all for it, and why wouldn't they be? Under the bill's provisions, the federal government would pay part of the cost of prescription drugs for all 44.8 million elderly and disabled beneficiaries. Healthcare insurance was for it, too, because the money would flow through them. The new benefit, called Medicare Part D, subsidized approximately the first 2,500 of a senior citizen's prescription drug costs. En route to final passage, two versions of the bill emerged. One cleared the House on June 27, 2003, and the other passed the Senate on July the 7th. One called for a cap on drug prices, the other did not. The drug industry stood to gain more with one than the other, but either way, the gain would be huge. Congress went into a joint conference committee on November 21st to iron out differences. It was finally signed by President Bush on December the 8th with no caps on drug prices. Throughout the process, the senators and representatives were buying and selling pharmaceutical stocks that could be hurt or benefit from the legislation. Yet not everyone succumbed to temptation. Perhaps no congressman held more stock in branded pharmaceutical companies than James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, who owned between $1 million and $5 million in Merck stock, $500,000 in Abbott Labs, and between $700,000 and $1.2 million in Pfizer. To his credit, Sensenbrenner didn't trade stock during the debate. By contrast, Congressman James Oberstar of Minnesota voted to burn the flag, folks. Quietly sold off his shares in the generic drug manufacturer Pharmaceutical Resources. As the bill moved forward, he sold his holdings when the stock was selling at $70 a share. After Bush signed the bills, the stock plummeted to $40. 3 days before President Bush signed the Medicare legislation into law, Oberstar also sold his shares in Health Extras, a pharmacy insurance management services firm. After Bush signed the stock, it lost 10% of its value. Oberstar had been in Congress since 1975. One term of office, he would have been there how long? And knew the ways of Washington. Congressman Jeb Bradley of New Hampshire had just been seated, and he apparently was a quick learner. Bradley owned 300,000. So as soon as they hit the deck, they're filching. Owned over 300,000 in pharmaceutical stock when he took office. By October, he bought additional shares of Pfizer, Merck, Johnson & Johnson before voting in favor of the prescription drug benefit. Merck's stock jumped 10% in the weeks that followed. But by far the most congressional trading of pharma stock during the debate was John Kerry and his wife. So, you know that Kerry is dirty. That doesn't count champagne contributions from Bain Capital. Yeah, that doesn't count. If they can buy, this is Max Baucus. Let's see what Max Baucus of Montana. He's the one that said it's a train wreck, right? He was negotiating with pharmaceutical companies and putting his imprint on the legislation. He was buying and selling healthcare stocks. Baucus did not do a lot of stock trading, and he's not a wealthy man. But during 2009, as he was shepherding healthcare legislation in the Senate, fully 20% of Baucus's stock transactions involved healthcare-related stocks. He bought Gilead Sciences, Abbott Labs, and Fluor Corporation, heavily involved in the sector, building hospitals and medical care centers. All three were perceived winners in the healthcare debate, and he seemed to do pretty well. He bought Abbott at 45, and it soared to 54. Meet Congressman John Boehner, who was leading the opposition to Obamacare. And he may have been fighting John Kerry on policy matters, but he was entirely allied with him when it came to investment decisions. Boehner bought numerous, in 2009, health insurance company stocks, including tens of thousands of dollars in Cardinal Health, Cigna, and WellPoint. On the same day, Boehner purchased shares in the big pharma companies Amgen, Johnson & Johnson, Forest Labs, COVIDN, and Pfizer. He also bought shares in CareFusion. Just days later, the Washington Post declared that the public option was officially dead. When Boehner bought WellPoint stock on December the 10th, the price was $56 a share. Within a month, it was $66. It's nice to have sure winners, isn't it? So that's John Boehner. There is a congressman who voted to burn the flag. He's from the state of Washington. He and two others, this guy's name is Jim McDermott. He's a congressman from the state of Washington. Him and a rat named Banya and a rat named Thompson, I believe. I think that was his name. The three of them went to Baghdad to meet with Saddam Hussein with their palms stretched out. You know what? That's why the only reason they went, they didn't go to talk peace. They went there to get some of that extra cash that Saddam was flashing. Oh, no, they were there for the American people. Yes, yes. And on Wednesdays, every Wednesday, we're all going to have chocolate pudding. Congressman Jim McDermott of Washington State bet big on one small biotech company as Project BioShield was working its way through the House. McDermott, a member of the powerful Ways and Means Committee and a medical doctor by training, took more than 10% of his entire investment portfolio at Wells Fargo and bought shares in a small Canadian company called ID Biomedical. On June 7, 2004, just weeks before he voted for the bill, the firm just happened to produce disease vaccines, exactly the kind that Project BioShield was looking to fund. They were worried about Al-Qaeda dropping the plague on us. With the passage of Project BioShield, ID Biomedical would secure $8 million from Washington to develop a plague vaccine. McDermott's timing was nearly perfect. He bought the 2,000 shares at $10 a share, paying a total of $21,000. According to his brokerage statement, he sold the stock a little more than a year later, cashing it in at $58,000. And you're out there buying a lottery ticket with no hope. McDermott was not alone. Congressman Amo Houghton, Republican of New York, saw his investment 1 year, one term for termite. You'll save a lot of money. Amo Houghton, Republican of New York, saw his investment portfolio mushroom with biodefense medical stocks in the weeks before Project BioShield became law. His investment fund bought $30,000 in Avant Immunotherapeutics, now called Celdex. On July the 15th, 16th, and 19th, and 21st, just days before Bush signed the bill, the company was developing next-generation anthrax-fighting drugs and would do significant business through Project BioShield. Houghton also gobbled up shares in Nanogen, a biomedical company, twice on July the 12th and the 15th. And he bought $17,000 in Northfield Labs on July the 14th and another $16,000 the next day. Northfield was developing blood replacement alternatives and would get grants from the U.S. Army through BioShield. On July the 15th, Houghton bought another $20,000 of Hollis Eaton Pharmaceuticals. On the same day, he bought almost $35,000. Not bad for a guy, huh? That's got work getting $176,000 a year plus benefits for him and the wife. On the day, he bought almost $35,000 in Maxim Pharmaceuticals, which provides antiviral drugs. The next day, he went back for more shares of Hollis Eaton and bringing his total holdings to $40,000. All these companies would benefit from the infusion of federal dollars. Before he served in Congress, Houghton had a long career in corporate America as CEO of Corning and as a member of several corporate boards. If, as a corporate CEO, he had executed these trades based on inside information concerning, say, a merger, it might have been problematic and certainly would have received the attention of the SEC. But as a member of the Congressional Crooks, this sort of behavior is acceptable and commonplace. So there's a little treat on throw them all out and you know what's going on. This is just pharmaceuticals. Any idea? They should have a chart every night. Stuart Barney should do one on bribes. You know, to show the peaks and the valleys. We're down to 12 minutes. And let me see what we can find for you. Being that we lost the summer, I'll give you the summertime blues.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. Oh well, my mom and papa told me, son, you gotta make some money. Now, if you wanna use the car to go riding next Sunday. Oh well, I didn't go to work, told the boss I was sick.
You can't use a car cause you didn't work a leg.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. I'm gonna take 2 weeks before I ever find vacation. I'm gonna take my problem to the United Nations. Well, I called my congressman and he said, quote,
I'd like to help you, son, but you're too young to vote.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime
blues. You ever see the movie The Manchurian Candidate with Angela Lansbury and Frank Sinatra? There's a scene in it. There's three scenes in it that'll tell you what old America was like. One is the Senate, the senator, the good senator, is recognizing Angela Lansbury and her husband as communists. And he outs them in an argument in a private home, and he says, "I'm going to do everything in my power to put you out of business." And he says, "I'm going to notify the ACLU about you." All right? Because he believed the ACLU was fighting communism. Now we know the ACLU is one giant communist organization. Yeah, allegedly. And the other one that really cracked me up is Lawrence Harvey is the Manchurian candidate. And he's a bachelor. He was in a POW camp in North Korea. He was brainwashed. They were all brainwashed. And they all have the same nightmare. And they get together, they start comparing notes, and they find out, they draw the conclusion that they were brainwashed. And one of the torturers shows up at Lawrence Harvey's door. Of course, he doesn't recognize him because he was brainwashed not to recognize him. And it's, I think the guy's name is Henry De Silva. He always played a bad guy, and he looked Oriental. He plays in this North Korean spy, and he knocks on the door, and he goes, "What?" And Lawrence Harvey goes, "What do you want?" And he goes, "I apply for a job." He goes, "What job? I don't have no job over here." He says, "I'd be very good for you. I'm a translator. I cook. I do everything." He says, "Translator? We don't need a translator here. This is the United States of America. We all speak English." That's in the 50s. In the 50s. So, it's two out of three. I can't remember the third one. But it goes to show you how times have changed, huh? All right, so Now, that brings me, we got 8 minutes left, and I wanted to talk about the American Indian. I've been a big fan of the American Indians growing up before they took away the guns from the little children and turned them into good little communists, peace-loving communists who will let the Russian troops come in and take mommy and daddy away. Yeah. Everybody had a gun. I had a cap gun. I had a six shooter. I had a Daisy, a BB rifle. And if you sold clove salve and you sold a dozen cans of clove salve, you could get a free Red Ryder, a Daisy, a baby gun, a BB gun. Later on, I got a baby gun. But today they just arrested an 8-year-old in class because his Halloween costume was a guy with two rifles and two swords. So they automatically identified him as a potential patriot, and they've got him in rehab. But so growing up, the American Indian, I used to love cowboy westerns. I used to love them. As a matter of fact, this morning I was brushing my teeth with my finger because the toothbrush went missing. And I flashed back to a movie starring Burt Lancaster. And he was a cowboy, and he was fast with the gun. He was, you know, he was a real good shooter. And in the scene, one of the Western scenes, he's brushing his teeth with his finger. And he had perfect teeth, Burt Lancaster. He had a big eating grin. And he was very handsome. He was handsome. He did all his own stunts. He was a trapeze artist. And I flash back to another movie. From Here to Eternity, about GIs in Hawaii, just about during or before Pearl Harbor, and the big love scene, he was the hunk, and the beauty of the day was Deborah Kerr, and the opening scene that shocked the nation on the beach by the water. And they were locked in a love embrace, side by side. Shocked the nation at a time when movies were made, every actor had or actress had to have 1 foot on the, if it was a bedroom scene, they had to have 1 foot on the floor. You try that sometime. But anyway, that's how our nation was at that time. And they used to make holy movies, The Song of Bernadette. Yeah. Going My Way with Bing Crosby, Saving the Old Church. Now, you go to Macy's, they got a red star, and if you say, where's the miracle of 34th Street, they tell you to mind your own business. Yeah. Big red star, and believe. Believe what? Believe I'm going to pay more here today or what? Believe. Why can't you say happy birthday, baby Jesus? The Marine Corps sings it. Yeah, but not for much longer. Not after Obama's czars get through going through the Marine Corps. Everybody's going to be wearing negligees in the combat zone. You're out of uniform, soldier. Your bra is on backwards. Well, it's the only place I can keep the grenade, Sarge. Yeah, unbelievable, man. We're in trouble. We're sissifying the nation. We're going to have, and the suicide rate has to be up, let me tell you. We know the divorce rate is up. Yeah, marriage isn't working out too well. Let me go to my tribute to the American Indian. Guys have baseball playing cards. I used to have American Indian tribe cards, and I loved them. I really enjoyed my favorite hero. One of the first books I read was The Life of Crazy Horse. And now they're building a monument to him out there just like they got the ones for the four greatest presidents, not including Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Those are going to go up in the Kremlin wall. But they're building a monument to Crazy Horse. Sioux people, most admirable. Comanches, Arapaho, Assiniboine, Ojibwe, Osage, Osage. Nez Perce, the war tactics of Chief Joseph. He had a Christian name. Chief Joseph of the Nez Perce are studied in West Point, who just had their first gay wedding in the chapel today. Yippee-yi-yo. Yep. Arapaho, did I say Navajo? The Navajo code talkers. Well, some scumbag decided to make an issue about the Washington Redskins, and they played the race card. Most American Indians will tell you that they are the founders of this country, that without them, the white man wouldn't have had corn on the first weekend he landed here. And without them and guides like Sacagawea, who worked with Lewis and Clark, with saints like Catherine Tikawitha, the Lily of the Mohawks, us white Americans grew up admiring and copying American Indians. And it was an honor to take the name of a tribe if you were a gang or a football team. And all of a sudden, some white communist that decides he's going to make an issue of the Washington Redskins, which never bothered anybody until the communists found a way to play it. So now they've dragged the great image of American Indians down to the level of slaves and race baiters, when most American Indians prefer to be considered warriors and were never slaves. And to this day, they are still warriors, and they serve honorably in the U.S. military. So when I see somebody playing another race or religion and he's not one of them, I look at that as a communist stunt. And I just wanted you to know that to show you how dishonest the communists are, the University of Washington has a Sioux hero, and his name is Pappy Boyington. And he went to the University of Washington State and graduated in 1934. He is the holder of the Congressional Medal of Honor. And if you ever watched the movie, I forget what, it's about air races in the Pacific, the Black Sheep Squadron. That was Pappy Boyington. That was led by Pappy Boyington, who retired a colonel. And he lived a long life. He lived over, I think, 76 years. But his alma mater, some people wanted to put a monument to him on the campus, and the communists protested it. They called him a warmonger. And they said that we have too many white heroes. We need other races. But he's a Sioux. And then you look at the Marine Corps monument, and that is five Marines who raised the flag at Iwo Jima. And if you go to my website, I think it's it'll probably be Spirit of America Party Radio Show.com. If you go there, you'll see the famous Iwo Jima monument. Except the last guy raising the flag is dressed as an Indian, and that's Ira Hayes, who was an American Indian. American Indians have a great history and a great tradition in this country, And only the communists play up the harm that was done to them by savages. But you have to remember that not all American Indians were sweethearts. And one of the ploy was stealing horses, stealing women, and raiding and making slaves of their enemies. You only have to see the Apocalypto that was done by the great director Mel Gibson, who gave us one of the greatest movies that stirred everybody's conscience, The Passion. A great movie. And Mel Gibson always gave us great movies. Yes, and of course the communists will Sarah Palin him too. They'll call him a drunk and an anti-Semite. The communists are great with labels. Beware of somebody with a label machine. But the American Indian, we all look up to and admire. The Boy Scouts use American Indian survival techniques all the time. All the time. And I hold the American Indian in high regard. And I resent it when a communist decides to find an open wound and put salt in it for the dissection of the United States. The biggest threat to the Communist Party of North America is the United States. They must always be playing one faction off against the other, just like the Romans did. So having said that, I'm going to say sayonara, and I may have an Indian tune we can go out with. I should go out with the Star Spangled Banner because some people don't even know the words. But here we go. I'll give you a little taste of this.